And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into 102.5 The Game here live at Barrel House Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Toronto tonight, 7 o'clock. Puck drop, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Steve, what's up?
What's happening?
We got a lot to get into today. A lot.
We do. And by the way, just walking over here this morning, time change last weekend. It doesn't feel temperature-wise like spring.
It doesn't feel like spring?
But when you walk and the sun is, you know, further into the day like it is right now, it's got me in a good mood.
Well, it should be. You should be in a good mood because you know what you don't have to deal with in your walk over here?
The traffic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you never have to deal with. So I don't know if you meant for that to be an incredibly good decision on your part to live downtown, but
I don't regret
for the rest
it.
Of us out there,
I don't regret it.
There's a lot of envy. So the Predators tonight and Maple Leafs, just a quick homestand, one game, and then back out on the road.
Does that even count as a homestand?
It's just a home game, right? Yeah. It's not a stand. It's just a game. It's a quick 2 hours and 45 minutes, and then they're going to be on their way to Minnesota. Minnesota and Winnipeg over the weekend, which are huge implications on that. Of course, the NCAA tournament kicking off tonight, tipping off tonight. First tip will be at around 6:07 to be official, and that will be down in Atlanta. That'll have Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada, the 7 versus 11 matchup. And they'll get the winner of Kentucky and Kansas State, which will be in the nightcap. And then about 30 minutes after the tip of the first game out in Los Angeles, it'll be Texas A&M and Michigan. And then the nightcap out in L.A. will be Florida State and Gonzaga. So that's the games tonight.
Not a ton of sizzle if you're looking for big names there necessarily. But I think we could have some really interesting matchups. You know, I'm excited to see Loyola versus Nevada to see if that veteran team can keep it on going against a team of transfers coached by an NBA reject, basically. Kansas State gets its best player back, and Dean Wade, he should be able to go tonight after not playing at all the first weekend of the tournament. Coach Cal talking about don't drink the poison yesterday. What a great line from him. But I think that's how a lot of people view Kentucky in that regional right now, and Atlanta is – You're the highest remaining seed. You should have an easy time this weekend in Atlanta. But what we've seen in this tournament is nothing is easy. And then out west, Gonzaga, can they get back to another Final Four after breaking through last year? Florida State, I think, is a team that's more talented than anybody gave them credit for. Same thing about Texas A&M. And obviously Michigan maybe becoming the model of consistency in a lot of ways in college athletics under John Beilein. So I think – while there may not be a lot of sizzle when it comes to the table tonight as games tip off, I think as it gets going, I think we're going to actually see some really good matchups.
Yeah, I thought he was kind of pulling a page out of the little Nick Saban's book, you know.
You call somebody an intern?
No. In fact, he wasn't calling the media poison, right? That's what Nick Saban said. The media, you're poison. You're rat poison, to be exact. But look, in fairness, he's trying to pull out every stop because now they went from nobody's talking about them, right? And now they're the prohibitive favorite to come out, which is crazy after the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. But because of the way it played out in that region with no Virginia, no Cincinnati, no Tennessee, I mean, list goes on and on. Yeah, and so he doesn't want his kids going, now everybody's going, that's the easiest path. You guys should be easily be in the Final Four. He doesn't want his kids listening to that. That's the worst thing that could happen, right?
Oh, no question. I mean, think about it. On this show, Darren, what was it, a month ago? They'd come off of losing 4 in a row. We were looking at the end of their schedule, which seemed pretty difficult, and was like, gosh, can they even get to 500 in the SEC? And if they don't, they're probably in the tournament, but all of a sudden they're very much in the bubble conversation. They obviously got hot at the right time, finished strong, go win the SEC tournament. They're playing great basketball, but all of a sudden that team who everybody was counting out and these freshmen who've been lauded their whole lives and people say you can't do anything, now all of a sudden they're the favorites. How do they respond?
Let's find out a little bit more about that. Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. He's on the line with us. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Darren. Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great.
Well, you tell us. You've got to put your coaching hat on. You know, now John Calipari's had to switch his whole storyline to this tournament because they went in, nobody talking about them. Everybody had them getting beat in the second round to Arizona. We know that matchup never even played out. Now everybody's looking at him like, if you don't get to the Final Four, you're a failure. So he's trying to switch the storyline. What's that like behind the scenes where he's trying to make sure his kids are focused down in Atlanta?
Well, I talked to Cal during the season when they were on their four-game losing streak, and Big Blue Nation thought the world was going to end. And John Calipari said, look, we just got to learn how to play with a little more fight on a consistent basis. We fight during the game. We fight on possessions, but we don't fight for 40 minutes. And once we learn how to fight and compete and defend for 40 minutes, he says, I think we can be really good. They went on that four-game losing streak. They only averaged 64 points a game. They didn't shoot it very well. Their last 10 games, okay, they're 9-1, 81 points per game, 49 from the floor, and 43 from three. They are playing on both ends of the floor at a high level, and it is falling just the way John Calipari wanted it to. Nobody talking about him going in, and, you know, he gets the upsets from the other teams to get his team's attention, that UMBC-Virginia game, obviously, and then the Buffalo win against Arizona. That did a lot of coaching for him, because what happens a lot of times is the big-name schools, the Dukes and the Virginias of the world, you know, they go through the gauntlet of the SEC or the ACC. Now your first game is a name that your kids know, but it's hard for them to really get up for, because they've just went through Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida in the ACC. You know, Virginia beats Duke, Carolina, Syracuse. Now their kids see UMBC. And it's just a mindset that kids have sometimes. And so by the upsets happening, I think it really helped John Calipari coach this team.
Another thing, Paul, that stood out to me that I heard him talk about here recently is Coach Cal discussing noticing how you talked about that four-game losing streak, what he saw out of his team during that four-game losing streak where they were distraught. They were kids. You could tell that this really, really bothered them. And by the way, you know that's some of the battle, trying to figure out what you – not every kid has fight. Not every kid has that desire to win everything. And they – and, you know, will do whatever it takes to win. And I think he saw that fight in his team, and that probably gave him encouragement down the stretch. Like, hey, these kids want to win. That's a good thing. You can't coach that.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, kids say they want to be great. Kids say they want to be champions, and it takes a championship effort to be a champion. So, but there's not very many better than John Calipari in terms of maximizing the most of his team. I coached against him when I was an assistant coach at Boston College. His teams were good, okay, and we were really good, and they beat us twice. We played at the old Boston Garden on CBS. It was the game of the state of Massachusetts. He's an excellent X and O coach, but he doesn't get the credit for that because of the amount of talent that he puts on the floor. So where he gets a lot of credit, and deservedly so, is that he's a great motivator. He's an encourager. He has the ability to put people together that have different agendas, and we all know these kids are thinking – whether it's in the back of their mind or in the front of their mind about the NBA, he has a gift to bring the best together and make them play for one purpose, and that's what they're doing right now.
Paul Biancardi on the line with us, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. The other SEC team left standing after the first two rounds was Texas A&M. And I don't know how many people had that. And Billy Kennedy has done a really good job. There was a lot of hype going into the season, Paul, but it didn't play out that way. And, you know, here they stand, and they've got a tall task tonight taking on Michigan. How do you see that game faring?
Well, guys, I sat right behind the Texas A&M bench when they not just beat North Carolina, they beat them down. I mean, that was impressive. And I was in Charlotte for all the games, so I saw UMBC beat Virginia. I saw Kansas State win two games. Texas A&M, to me, they were just so impressive in that North Carolina win. And it's the front court. Their front court they're shooting 63% in the paint. That's only second to Duke. Tyler Davis and Robert Williams are averaging, you know, over 20 points a game combined in the paint. They're on the glass. They're blocking shots. They play man. They play zone. They're really impressive. Their guard play has been very consistent in terms of shooting and, you know, assist to turnovers. This team's scary to me. This team is scary good because they're seasoned. They have veterans. And you guys mentioned that they were up and down this year. They had suspensions. You know, they had some injuries. But now they're playing like that top five team that was ranked earlier in the year. And I was really impressed with them in Charlotte. And now they got a heck of a game coming up with Michigan, who is a tremendously gifted offensive team in terms of shooting the basketball. John Beilein, if anyone can dissect and cut up a defense, it's John Beilein. And Michigan has also played very good defense as of late. This one to me is a toss-up, but I don't know if Michigan can handle Texas A&M in the paint.
Yeah, you talked about their shooting, but, yeah, I wanted to ask you, does Billy Kennedy water those trees consistently? Because they seem like they grow from game to game. He's got some big boys. He makes it difficult. If you try to go in the paint, you're going to have to earn it.
No, he puts Robert Williams and Tyler Davis, see, he can shoot it outside the paint, and Robert Williams can keep you honest outside the paint. And when the shot's missed, I'm telling you, they're on the glass hard. And on the other end, you know, the not sexy defensive glass, nobody talks about the defensive glass. You shoot and miss against Texas A&M, they're cleaning that defensive glass up. You don't get second chance opportunities against Texas A&M. Their guards, you know, and DJ Ho can really stroke it. Starks, athletic, great game tonight. To me, it's a great game as well, and all the games are great. That one to me is a real even matchup. I'm going to be sitting close to see who wins that and, you know, how that game plays out in terms of, you know, who can, you know, really put their will against the other team and their strategy.
Chatting with Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN. And, Paul, if there's one bracket out there that has, I guess, sort of the blue bloods all the way through it, it's the Midwest region in Omaha with Kansas on one side, and then in the bottom half of the bracket, you've got Syracuse. Even though they're 11 seed, that's a blue blood program against Duke. What do you expect to see there, especially, I guess, the ACC matchup? Will Syracuse be able to bother Duke with that zone in the way they have everybody else in this tournament, considering Duke knows the zone and even plays it themselves some now these days?
Yes, well, Coach K got the zone from Jim Boeheim, so this is going to be an interesting matchup of schemes, but it's also very simple. Both teams will play a 2-3 zone, and the difference is, you know, Duke's guys are bigger, longer, more athletic, and that zone is a tougher zone to score against, the Duke zone, because they play it just like Syracuse. The two guys at the top have really good size, Grayson Allen, Trayvon Duval, 6'3 and 6'5, and then you got Marvin Bagley on one wing, and sometimes you have Gary Trent on the other, Wendell Carter at 6'9". They put in Delorier at 6'9". I think Duke's going to win this game because they're the better offensive team. And when it comes to scoring the basketball, Duke can, I think, effectively make shots against the zone. I think they do a good job of what I like to say, dribble gap it. They take a hard dribble, they make two guys play you, and then they give it up to the next guy and do it again and keep that ball moving for open shots. Look for that. But also, they are going to attack the short corners, the high post, and I think they'll get more paint points than Syracuse. Very important thing to look at tonight. Watch each team to see who they put in the middle of that zone. Duke's going to put Gary Trent in there, Grayson Allen. You put guards, big guards or small forwards against the zone in the middle to score or be a playmaker. You don't want to put bigs, although Duke's bigs, Carter and Bagley, they can shoot it from that foul line, and they can put it on the deck and get to the basket. Better offense for Duke. I see them moving on.
Yeah, I thought that was where Michigan State made a mistake by not putting Miles Bridges there at any point against that zone. Paul, we talked about these last two games. You've brought up a common denominator in length with Texas A&M and then Duke against that Syracuse zone, who has plenty of length themselves. According to KenPom, 5 of the 6 tallest teams in the country moved on to the Sweet 16. So length seems to be a thing. No team has more length than Purdue, and I've been bullish on them all season long. But if Isaac Haas is not available or severely limited this weekend with the dislocated elbow, do they have any chance to get through that region and beat Villanova?
Well, I have to root for Purdue because I picked them in our ESPN expert picks. I picked them to win it all. I had them at the Battle for Atlantis down in the Bahamas, and they were up and down, but, boy, you could see the experience. You talked about the length across the board from, you know, 2, 3, 4 spot, and then obviously in the center spot with Haas and Harms. I still think they have a chance to get to the Final Four, and I'll tell you why. It's the three-point shot. They beat you at 4 positions with a three-point shooter. And if you stretch out against them, they're good enough. They're easily good enough to put it on the deck and get to the rim. So they have the offense, to me, not just in jump shooting, but they create some fouls. They're a very good two-point shooting team. They're experienced. Those guys are really experienced. We're talking about a handful of seniors that I think can get on a little bit of a two-game run right now. And, you know, Haas, is he going to play? I don't know. Obviously, he presented that inside-outside threat. But Purdue still survived without Haas by making the open shot. That's what they do best. If you give them uncontested shots or too many of them, you're going to lose.
Paul, I can't let you get away. I need to ask you to go into the recruiting crystal ball here. Romeo Langford, what's he going to do? Vanderbilt fans want to know.
Well, Vanderbilt fans want to know. I spoke to Romeo Langford and his father the other night. I do know that he's going to wait until the end of April. He has the McDonald's All-American game coming up. We also have the McDonald's scrimmage on TV on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, then the game on Wednesday, Jordan Brand Classic, and then the Nike Hoop Summit. And he told me the other night that he's thinking about waiting till those events are over till he makes a decision. So we all have to wait another 3 weeks. He's a man of very few words, and I couldn't even tell you which way he's leaning. But if my gut tells me it's between Indiana and Vanderbilt, but I have nothing to back that up. It's just my instincts on that one.
If he picks Vanderbilt with the class that Bryce Drew has already got committed, what is going to be the hype machine for Vandy going into next season, in your opinion?
Wow. It's going to be really high. And Bryce Drew, if he gets that commitment, will have to taper the expectations down. But that class will be talented. It will be skilled, be college-ready. Those 4 freshmen will start. Darius Garland, one of the best point guards in the country. He's right in the backyard there. You'll see him at the McDonald's game and the McDonald's scrimmage. Simi Shitu, a power forward who, you know, with an NBA body right now. So, and then there's a kid named Aaron Naismith. Get to know his name. He's 6'6", and he's one of the best shooters in the class.
Yep, he's a player.
He's in our ESPN Top 100. So if you add Romeo Langford to those 4 guys, you're looking at a Kentucky-type team.
Wow. Boy, it's a good problem to have as a coach, right? Tapering expectations because so many people are talking about you. I guess it's a good problem to have, but, I mean, you know, you're going to have to taper no matter what. Even if they don't land him, it's still going to be a really, really good team, as we know. Paul, really enjoyed the visit. Thanks for for talking a little hoops with us. Let's do it again soon.
All right, thank you so much for having me, guys.
Paul Biancardi, National Director of Recruiting for ESPN, and he just gave us bad news. We're going to have to wait till at least the end of April. This story is going to continue until at least the end of April.
It is, but they have put in a ton of work. Roger Powell, the assistant, has got a great relationship with that family. I know Bryce Drew has been up there a bunch. They've been in on him early. They've been in on him often. And they also have good deals with Darius Garland and his relationship with him as well. I know Darius Garland is serving as a recruiter in this situation too. So it's an opportunity to take what is already a very good class and make it a truly elite class at the top. And I'm glad he brought up Naismith too, because he is a big-time shooter that I think is getting overlooked because of the other guys and just how highly rated they are. But I think he can be a piece that right away at the college level can give you immediate points on the perimeter.
20 years in this town, I never thought I would hear the words that class will be compared to Kentucky's class when it comes to basketball. And that's what he said if they land Romeo. Wow. For Vanderbilt. Man, oh, man. That tells you the job Bryce Drew and his staff are doing. Man, if they can get this final piece, it is going to be possibly a really special season next year. We'll come back. Speaking of that, we'll head over to West End. We'll talk to their football coach. Derek Mason will join us next on 102.5 The Game.